Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are, as you many of you know, one of many such associations located throughout the world. And on the back of our little periodical, you can find a listing of these centers of study and effort. And also you can visit a far more beautiful rendition of the Declaration of ULT than you're about to hear. Just skimming through the highlights of that magnificent statement, we in Philadelphia are an association of interested parties and serious students who are focused wholly on the philosophy of theosophy. And that is the case with all of the different ULTs listed around the world. There's no constitution, there are no bylaws, no officers, no fees, no dues. It's not an organization. Rather, it's an association of volunteers who, on the basis of individual thinking and heartfelt conscience, associate themselves with the cause of keeping a straight line to the philosophy of theosophy open for the public and for the good of all mankind. The theosophical movement, as it's seen by the Association of ULT, is one that has absolutely no conditions to it, so that you will never find in these rooms any official statement or any motive that's driven on individual differences. Instead, everyone who is by heart drawn to the cause of keeping the philosophy alive and well, of studying it, of improving themselves to be the better able to apply the philosophy in the cares of daily life, you'll find all such volunteers welcome in the effort. So the focus that you'll hear from this platform is one of a view of what is the philosophy, what does it say, what is the message of the true nature of humanity, the true nature of universal brotherhood, and what is it, therefore, that altruism would bring to each and all of us as we leave these rooms and go out to our professional and personal family lives. Having said that, with the fact that there's no effort on any side issues of any kind, if you feel in your heart that you are getting something from reading the books or hearing the talks or participating in the Q&A sessions, please feel free to speak to whatever student is available at the desk, at the book table. And if you are interested in volunteering your time or energy, service, money, whatever it is that your heart tells you you have to offer, please come forward and do that. The program for May 2010 is one that has three pieces to it for this particular month. On Sunday mornings, we are following a theme entitled Psychism and Spirituality. Next Sunday morning is May 16th, and the title for that day is Higher and Lower Psychic Powers. So next Sunday, as this morning, the door opens promptly at 10:30, the presentation starts promptly at 11 and concludes at 12. On Wednesday night, May 12th, the building is open for two functions. At 5:30, there'll be a volunteer or two here to open up the building so that the reference library is available. It's in the front of this building on this floor. It's a very, very high quality reference library. We don't have the wherewithal to make loans to go home, but you certainly can come in and you can follow individual research of something that is particular to your incarnation. You can pick up the threads of what you've heard during a talk or a class, or you can prepare for a coming class. And there's always someone there who's ready, willing, and able to help with research needs of any kind. During that period, the book table is open, as it is before and after every class. so that if you feel that there is some literature you would like to have for home use, and you'd like to make a purchase, if you're a book tangible person, you can buy periodicals, brochures, books at cost. There's no profit to be made. This is the birthright of each human. If you're not a book person and you're an electronic person, there are many ways to go to the website for this lodge or to hit websites through the links so that you can also get to the literature for free in your own home on screen. Things are downloadable. This coming Wednesday night, the second function will be the ocean class. We're studying the Ocean of Theosophy, a series of articles by William Q. Judge, and the title for this coming Wednesday night is Nature Unaided Fails. The library will be open from 5:30 to 7:30, at 7:45 promptly, lasting until 9. We'll have that study class for a combined effort. The third prong of activities for the month are actually going to be held on the third Friday of the month. On third Fridays, the doors open at 6:30, and at 7, from 7 to 8, there is a comparative religion and philosophy class offered. That is always a panel presentation. The theme for this particular quarter of the year is the message of symbols. And this third Friday is Friday, May 21st. The topic for that evening will be the triangle and the star. So again, you're more than welcome to any of these presentations, and you're certainly welcome to act on your own conscience and to participate in the presentations. And again, the philosophy is the kingpin, if you will, or the queenpin of the entire effort of the association here. This morning, we have a forum. There will be a talk presented and then ample time for questions and answers thereafter. And in keeping with the theme of psychism and spirituality, today's title is Should Psychic Powers Be Developed?
There is a universal craze for occult powers, and any mention of the phrase is sure to attract plenty of attention. And not too surprising is the fact that there are plenty of people ready to take advantage of that desire and to offer or to show us the way to attain such powers. Just walk into any video store and you'll find racks of films based on these subjects. Browse around most bookstores, and there will be a whole section catering to this fascination. Where are these self-appointed teachers who undertake by video and books to initiate us into psychic powers and set our feet on the right path? Who are they? And how often would you find what you really want or what you really need? But what this general interest does show is that people are realizing more and more than ever that the real source of all help is to be sought within man himself, and that man is being, and that within man himself, and that this man is a being in whom the processes of evolution are to a great extent accomplished consciously by his own intuition and will. If so many people express their interest in these invisible worlds, why do H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge strongly discourage their students from involvement in the occult arts? Occultism is the exposition of the essence of life, of the essence of being, and of the essence of living. Let us never confuse it with the so-called occult arts, arts which are strictly forbidden to us as students of theosophy. The masters of theosophy has told us plainly, learn first discipline, first learn the law. William Q. Judge stated, "We must wait, however, until the inner man has grown to maturity. Then the powers which you crave, you will crave only as spiritual powers, and only to give yourself and them to others." So how do you get through to people who are interested in psychism and are not impressed with book knowledge passed on secondhand from people with little or no personal experience of psychic powers? How then is it possible to meaningfully explain a viewpoint based on theosophical teachings that there are far more important issues in the discovery of spiritual truths than psychism and spiritualistic practices? Ultimately, each individual has to find his way to these answers. However, two simple pieces of advice may prove of some value in explaining insights from theosophy on this subject. The first would be, how can you cope with other worlds if you can't cope with the world you're in? Most people, especially in today's rapidly changing world, have trouble in coping with the challenges we have in our everyday lives, much less with the allurements of the invisible realms. The great religious teachers have always suggested the development of self-mastery and the building of spiritual strength as the primary task for humanity, rather than concentrating on the development of psychic powers. So how is this done? By squarely facing the seemingly minor tasks of our duties each day. And gradually, we will build the moral strengths and attitudes which will allow the self and the safe unfoldment of the spiritual potential within us all, including the miraculous powers which lie sleeping in us. As Jesus is reported to have instructed his followers, seek first the treasures of the Spirit of the kingdom of heaven, and all other things will be added. What are these treasures he speaks of? Treasures of the Spirit humanity has always been enjoined to cultivate. They are the spiritual and intellectual faculties recognized the world over as indicative of an enlightened and godly person. They are intuition, discriminating vision, strong, compassionately directed willpower, and sympathy with the problems of others. All, by the way, we already possess. Cultivation of such qualities, rather than absorbing oneself in the peripheral aspects of nature's secrets, have always been the path of true self-knowledge and advancement in the service of others. Second point would be, in a battle, always maintain your objective. In the continuing battle to uplift human consciousness, the primary objective of our world as theosophists is to engender a universal spirit, a spirit of universal brotherhood. The study of the powers innate in man was placed as the third objective of the Theosophical Society, as the second objective being to pursue the study of ancient and modern religions, philosophies, and sciences. Our teachers have made it clear that universal brotherhood is the main point of our endeavor. But why is the fascinating study of man's hidden powers relegated to a lesser priority? In theosophy, as we understand it, psychic means all that lies between the purely spiritual and the purely physical in both man and nature. In man, psychic is a term that could be used for the middle principles of his being that connect self-consciousness and embodied existence. It therefore makes more sense in the long term to concentrate one's efforts on the more permanent and perfect spiritual aspects of the universe and oneself, rather than the impermanent psychic natures. As one theosophical teacher put it, by going to the fountainhead, we find the clearest water. So why drink from the muddy waters hundreds of miles from the spring? And from H.P. Blavatsky, nature gives us her innermost secrets and imparts wisdom only to him who craves and seeks truth for its own sake, and who craves for knowledge in order to confer benefits on others, not on his own unimportant personality. Today's topic: should psychic powers be developed?
Thank you. This is a huge topic, and we're reminded that next Sunday, the specifics of higher and lower psychic powers will be taken up. But as we know from all of the philosophy, that duality of what we perceive at this plane is a lower reflection, an illusion of what truly is one in the eternal plane. So I'm sure you came this morning. Oh, yep, there's a fast hand. She was ready.
We have a quote. This, we're paraphrasing a quote from Mr. Judge that we read several times, and it would seem to speak to this. Something like, let us learn to wait in the right way so that when the hour strikes, it finds us ready. Is that akin to this, where we shouldn't develop these powers now, but what is that waiting, and what is it that will happen when the hour strikes and we need to be ready? Is
there patience sweet that none can ruffle. We're reminded that Mr. Judge had three things to say upon his deathbed, did he not? Be calm, hold fast, go slow. And again, that theme of patience and putting first things first, being devotional or methodical in how we approach life. Perhaps from the declaration, you noticed that there was emphasis placed, you know, the meeting will start promptly at this time and end promptly at that time. The reason being that there's a cycle that's being produced, and there's a habitual cycle that's of energy that's being endowed. Well, in the case of the judge quote, in the case of the title is very provocative this morning. Should psychic powers be developed? Yes and no. Psychic powers, things that are not of this plane, everything that's between the most absolute, unconditioned, ethereal that we can even begin to think about, space, absolute motion, everything that's between that and the spirit that is emanated, all the way down to the lowest of what we perceive at this plane, and we're going to say minerals is the lowest form. Everything in between, there is a psychic potential. It's natural. It's universal. There's a process of evolution that's taking place that encompasses each and all in every direction of emanation that we can imagine or become aware of. But that process only goes so far. And what we'll be talking about Wednesday night is why nature can go so far and then unaided fails. So in the human kingdom, in the form that as soul we are presently using, there's patience needed, because as most sincere students come to the process of spiritual evolution, in other words, character development, the awareness of an application of ethics, we're often very aware that as we begin to work on being all that we can be in the service of others, we come upon more flaws, more limits, or more ways to grow to be all that we can be to serve others. And it seems to be this overwhelming process. Well, patience. It takes preservation, perseverance, endurance, patience to have that faith that this is an ongoing process, that it is energizing and it is not fatiguing, and that we can gradually move through a natural process, not in the all-American instant, I mean now, I want it now, fast. So it's not going to be an instant percolation. It's going to be a long effort of seeping in spirit so that all of the power that can be is, and in the service of others. Yes?
Well, let's take, for example, someone who is not familiar with the idea of reincarnation and karma, and yet in this lifetime has things that happen to them that they cannot explain where it's coming from. That they either can look at a person and all of a sudden know what's going on within that person, or they get all sorts of hints to give to others, and yet they don't understand what it is. So how do you handle that situation?
If there is power, if spirit that comes from the absolute is the power to become, and soul is the becoming, then as there is life after life, as we reincarnate, as soul takes on each new persona, that soul becomes like the tip of the iceberg in that incarnation. In other words, we perceive a bit of one tiny aspect of all of the wisdom gained and all the experiences had in past incarnations. And it may very well be that someone comes into this life and from time to time gets glimpses of an ability to perceive that's not based on reasoning from premise to conclusion, or an ability to perceive that's not based on physical tangibles, but which truly seems to spring from a direct cognition, an intuition internally. For some, that's a very fearsome thing, especially if it's out of control and it's 24/7. And that issue's taken up, certainly if you think about the popular TV shows today, with The Mentalist, or there's a show called Medium, in which there is a parent and a couple of daughters who have these incipient powers. They can't control them. The children don't understand them. The mother can't figure out why she's got them. That itself becomes a learning process and probably reflects a degree of causation from the past that's coming through in this particular personality and instrument. But that may be. It may happen. It may come upon any number of us. But the advice from the philosophy is that that is a very dangerous scenario right now. And here comes the answer: no, psychic powers should not be developed. They're potential in all. They will develop naturally as our character development unlocks them. But if we were to trip into a karmic scenario where things are happening that we can't control, then the better effort is to turn away from that and proceed again with patience and endurance, back to inspirational scripture, back to daily devotional books where there is a tone of peace and control and serenity and fulfillment for us, so that we can center in life as a very active soul entity, using mind in a conscious, premeditated, mindful manner, and avoiding passivity, avoiding extreme emotional states, and ever conscious as best we can of our motives and cleaning up those motives. Yes.
So, excuse me, is it then to be understood that we're discouraged from making conscious effort to develop psychic powers, but yet as we evolve as a soul, reincarnating, growing wiser, the these powers will naturally come?
They naturally unfold as it is karmically appropriate to do. And the reason that a lot of the philosophy, if you go through Isis Unveiled, pretty much every other page is given to a history of what true spirituality is versus what spiritualism is versus spirit versus psychic. And the reason the dangers are so prevalent and held out there as a warning, that those who take these TV shows to great heart and begin to dabble and try to develop these potentials, Ouija boards and fortune telling and all these other things that might happen, or the use of an imagination. There's some folks that use imagination and daydreaming to such an extent that they create a parallel life not based on the concrete reality of this plane. All those things lend themselves to a degree of passivity and open themselves to the astral light in a way that's very, very, very dangerous. It is said in the philosophy, and certainly you can come in on Wednesday nights and use the library to read the information, that those folks who sit and try to become incredibly passive, in other words, they're placing the lower mind, the physical body, the life force as they understand it, and their psychic emotional state as they understand it, they're trying to freeze that, become incredibly passive, and then go into a kind of a trance. Well, in essence, what that enduring effort, time after time after time, will do is it becomes colored by the motive of that practitioner. It also begins to pull apart all the fibers of those sevenfold principles that we've got at our avail. And very gradually then, the conduit, the synthesis, the beautiful harmony of these sevenfold principles begins to be frayed. And that fraying has effects physically, mentally, on the nervous system, on the astral, and frankly, we have to wonder all the different nervous conditions that are being researched and documented starting in the 20th century, and there's so many different forms of it, including perhaps the autism spectrum. Who's to say what kind of effects have come over into this life from a prior incarnation where the cart was placed before the horse? Instead of the spiritual development and that focus, the psychic development was a focus. Yeah.
So how would one know then if they're born and they have some of these tendencies? How would they know if it's a naturally occurring thing from prior spiritual experience and progress, or if it's something that shouldn't be worked on or developed, that it should be quashed, so to speak?
How does one know? Having had experiences in this life with a couple of children who were labeled schizophrenic, these children, very, very isolated in time and place and family line and age, frankly, both of them were very, very aware of the difference between what was a shared reality on this plane with another conscious being who could speak with them versus the reality on another plane in which there were sights and sounds and interactions that really didn't have any contrast. There was no way to find a point of communication that they could control, to the point where one of them would say to a teacher approaching from the periphery of his vision, are you real or are you one of them? And the teacher would offer a hand, the kid would touch the hand, okay, you're real, you're here. So that kind of awareness is potential. And should, in an imagination only here, no claims being made, it would seem to this student, and perhaps there's other views, that when an individual has an experience that is not physically tangible, that is not specifically in the light of this plane, the awareness is there that there's been a shift. And when that shift occurs, if it's distressing, it's not helpful to another, it's beyond the control of the thinker working through those principles at that moment, and if it is frightening in some way, it's just the intuition or the conscience is, this just isn't quite right. That's the time to change focus and make an effort to become more and more in control of mind and faculties on this plane. Yeah.
We think that's the essence right there. The individual has to ask, who's in charge here?
Yeah.
If I'm in control of something, if I'm driving the car, then there's a measure of safety involved. But if the car is driving me, anything in the world can happen. So our effort is to develop sensitivity and responsiveness, but not passivity. So we don't let even the highest power we might think we have take charge of us. We stay in control of it.
We stay in control of it. And you know, there's without stepping on the toes of the presentation next Sunday, what we're doing in this moment is actually the culmination of a tremendous psychic evolution that's happened across the last several days. Many of us have looked at the title and considered the whole month of titles and how do they fit together. The fact that a couple of volunteers gave some time to read as late as this morning, a third volunteer quietly and selflessly quickly looked something up on the internet and printed out a fact sheet. The fact that we can communicate out loud, hear the sounds and convert them into meaningful sound, the fact that we can read what someone else had the creative force to think about and put into writing, all of these things are degrees of communication and realization, the use of imagination, the use of concentration, the use of creative force. We take it for granted. We learn speech very early on. We learn to decode words very, very early on. But it's only in the latter years of our incarnations that we really begin to understand the words we've decoded. To be or not to be? That's the question. Small child can decode it and pronounce it. Elderly child may begin to tease it out to understand what it fully means. Yeah.
Well, we heard the term focus, and we recall saying that duty is not burdensome, selfishness is. So we also heard another term in these terms, raise the self by the self. Well, could you straighten that out for us so that we can get the right focus?
Well,
overcoming these lower psychic.
Duty is not burdensome, but selfishness is. When we think about someone who has followed their bliss in this incarnation, and they've gone into a career path, be it homemaker or a job of service, a creative application of the arts, whatever the blissful path is, they may be able to express to us that it's almost a dirty joke that they're getting paid for what they're doing. That there is so much energy that comes from a heartfelt application of endeavor that the motivating and energizing factors of having meaningful work, of service to others, is so incredible that that dharma, that duty, becomes an all-encompassing, figuratively magic wand that uplifts that entire being. Well, if our dharma, our duty, is selfless service to others, then it would stand to reason that the kind of joy an artist finds in music and canvas, and also gets paid for, the kind of bliss that a parent or a teacher or a physician or a social worker, the kind of bliss that they get where they lose the personality and they lose the self-centeredness in the process of the service engendered, and they come away lighthearted and free, that's what's to be followed. So what is it about psychic powers that would be doing that? Well, gradually, as someone is more self-aware, I am soul in a particular body with a set of potential powers and instruments. I am here as part of a universal whole, just one aspect of the oversoul, which is just one possible expression of the absolute. And if I'm here, if all experience, all lessons learned, all use of thought, word, and deed, if all of those things are in the service of harmony and in the service of the development of the psychic potential of all, if that's the emphasis, then that's going to be tremendously invigorating. And your second part, I've lost.
Well,
raise the self by the self. So we raise the lower self by the efforts of a focus, of a goal that is of a higher self, the eternal potential, the good of all. Yeah.
Let's start with the postulate that misuse of these powers of the mind naturally might lead to a rent or some kind of a split in the mental facility. So we go back to the example of the schizophrenic mind. Raising the self by the self reminded us, we saw a little bit of the movie A Beautiful Mind again recently, which is the true story of this professor in New Jersey that just wanted to teach, just wanted to explore mathematics with his students and work through his schizophrenia with tremendous effort, to the point where raising the higher, raising the lower by the higher, he was able to gain control over this mental rift in the service of his students. So it's a wonderful example of the effort and the struggle and suffering it might take as a result of misuse of these powers, that it is possible, but we think he's probably one in a million that could overcome that without medicine, without, you know, he went through, in his life story, he went through lots of different treatments and finally said, I have to do it on my own. So, number one, the point being that the misuse could lead to difficulties in the future life, and that that raising the self by the self is quite an effort, but possible.
If we posit the premise that there is true spiritual universal brotherhood, if we postulate that we are all aspects of one essence, then what we can see accomplished by one of us is possible for any and all of us. So if we are thinking about a particular professor at Princeton University who, by physical self-devised, self-fulfilled methods, has determined that he can overcome a particular mental brain function problem. If we can see a scientist in a wheelchair that continues at all costs, then we can be pretty sure that there are many such souls in incarnation where physical expressions of challenges in the instruments are very obvious to others, and it's relatively easy to see the struggle that such a soul is facing. It's not so easy to see the very, very subtle challenges that 100% of those of us that are in incarnation face. There could be someone on the street who is moving down that street or moving into a work environment with burdens beyond our wildest imaginations. They may not be visible to the public, but they may be every bit as crippling, if not more so, than a public case of schizophrenia. But that effort to take up the cross of the material that we are to bear in this incarnation and look in the mirror in the morning and say, this is what I've got to work with. These are my goals for the day. How can I take these goals and make sure the motives are pure? And how can I take this instrumentation that I've got available and use it to the best possible way and then move through the day and attempt that? That's real magic. Yeah.
One of the ways of attempting that is at that moment that you're speaking of, is to feel the sympathy for the misery, seen or unseen, that everyone else is going through. There is nothing that we have experienced or are experiencing that others are not equally suffering. So instead of focusing on, ooh, my problems, it's our problems. And a heartfelt goodwill to everybody will help us as well as others.
Absolutely. And in one of the Western religious traditions, there's the faith, hope, and charity, and the greatest of all these is love. That instruction is throughout all of the universal religions, because it's eternal. It's the truth that there is in the human kingdom the ability of soul, mind, wisdom, of heart to be expressed in empathy and to have moments of clear seeing where, I understand. I've had that experience. Can I offer this? This is what you might consider to do. And then just offer a happy thought and move on. Your hand's been up and down.
excuse me. Do you think that it might all be related to how we experience pain and how, pain psychologically being the motivator of why people do things, and its subsequent effect is that something hurts, and how we relate to that then relates to our being. Like in the gym, we say if it hurts, it's healing. So if we look at pain as that kind of effect and use it to inspire us, could the same thing that causes that pain to someone else who relates it as debilitating, then can go in the very same thing affecting two people in different ways, lead them to then affect others in completely opposing causes?
Sure. The very ancient teachings of the Buddha involving life is suffering, and the suffering is made from pain. That pain comes from attachment, wrong attachments and efforts. That kind of wisdom, whether we call that a psychology of the Buddha or whether we see that as part of one aspect or one statement of theosophy, the divine wisdom, working according to that premise that all of life is painful because as soul we're reincarnating to correct the imbalances that we've set up karmically. There was something in previous lives that was engendered that was out of balance with the harmony of the whole. And at this point in time, in this incarnation, we have the right conditions for a particular opportunity to learn from that lesson. And lessons are frequently painful. Suffering comes from misapplication of attachment. In a previous comment from the audience, there was a statement of duty versus selfishness. Well, if we see our eternal duty as a selfless service, then any attachment, any misunderstanding or misapplication of that means that we need to work through some results from that line of thinking. And if we allow ourselves to look into the eyes of any other in our path, in our lives, and realize that that is oneness, those two eyes are soul looking at soul as a oneness, that's a merging of vision and ideal, and then all that can naturally be is empathy for the other and some creative thought. You know, we may come upon a situation where we really have to take a tough stand, an honest stand on something. The question then becomes active use of soul and instruments. How do we take a tough stand and do no harm? How do we look into the eyes of the other, appreciate where they are in their development, empathize with where they are, and then create the right words and scenario to help them over the pain that's sure to come? Big questions, but magical and creative moments that we have the potentiality to do. Yes?
Another example of doing something for somebody else and somehow makes you feel good. I know some people who are natural healers and true healers, and I've experienced them, and invariably they say, when I do healing on someone, I energize, I receive energy from it. And it's a selfless act, but a byproduct is that they feel energized, and they, you know, they are charged for what they do or whatever, and they're beautiful people.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very possible, and we could research the issue of natural healing, laying on of the hands, the life of Edgar Cayce maybe, where there are individuals who come into this incarnation with the possibility of assisting in the relief of pain of others. Some do it without instrumentation, some do it with a kind word. As long as there is pure motive, and that's the big catch, is the purest of motive, and that no profit is made in any plane or any application, then we may be witnessing or experiencing a very pure type of creative source in another soul. But we are so complex. If we come into this incarnation because we have lessons to learn, and if where we sit this morning we can say to ourselves, wow, I know I have a high motive in a particular avenue, but gee, I know also that sometimes after an action, I'm aware that there were these other ugly motives that might have been going, and sometimes we don't know until the effects start coming back. Again, a very, very developed one who has complete mastery over the principles and the conditions and their motives, etc., may be one who's not telling you. It may be that it's such a soul that they've reached a position of tremendous humility. They may be doing hands-on healing without saying a word. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very, very careful. But in addition, if there's any degree of passivity involved on your part, now you're in a very different avenue, a very different arena, dangerous arena. You've got to be careful. Was your hand up? No? Way, way in the back.
Thinking about what was said earlier about looking into the eyes of another, we move so quickly. We're quick to say, hi, how you doing, and keep walking. We never even hear the other's answer or not even really interested in it, it's more of a habit. So thinking along the lines of healing, we can think of nothing more wonderful than just looking into the eyes of another soul for a moment in time, giving them complete attention. We think that would be a wonderful healing moment for both. You know, whether it's, I see you look a little sad today, a little down today. Is everything okay? And give them 2 minutes of your time. It's a wonderful healing gift that costs nothing. As was said, the other is not even aware that this is a conscious effort. Oh, I guess they just noticed me. But the tremendous benefit of that recognition that we are all one, we are all in this together, is a gift that's priceless, we think, and we can all do that.
Mm-hmm. It might be a very priceless gift, and here's the other piece of what we need to work on before we start putting things into practice. What we intend is a priceless gift may not be what the other needs or wants. And culturally, that looking, that sustained eye-to-eye contact may actually be threatening for some folks. So while we're thinking and acting from motives that are very, very pure, we need to be very, very aware and develop discernment. When do I help? How do I help? You know, with the right involvement with two kindred spirits, the eyes in so many literatures are the windows of the soul. And there are some cultures where photographs can never be taken because they don't want their eyes photographed in particular. Babies look into the eyes very directly of their caregivers. They want to see those eyes, and they try, you can see their little eyes trying to focus to be able to see the eyes of the caregiver. There's a lot of research that you could do about eyes. Are they even physical? They are physical, but are they solid? Mm-mm. And there's a degree of water, a degree of nerve substance, very ethereal substances on this plane. And the eyes are a point in a circle, aren't they? They contract and they expand. So there's a lot to be said there, but just be sure that the other can accept such a gift. Yeah.
And the way we see is because the center of the eye is nothing.
Yes.
If it weren't nothing, we couldn't see. But just for a moment, we could all take the time, not just being aware of someone around us who maybe needs some friendliness or encouragement, but being aware of life around us, of the sidewalk, of the buildings, of the sky. If you start practicing that, you'll see, oh, that person needs help with the door. And you can just do it without a thought for yourself. And you probably won't even get a thank you, because for all the other no's, you're going in the same door. So we can start practicing by being more observant of what's going on around us.
If we're more observant about what's going on around us and we're doing these things, and the thought occurs to us, gee, I didn't even get a thank you, now we've got a fertile ground for looking at our motives. You know? And that becomes a lesson for ourselves and for the other as well. What comes to mind is this is important in all avenues of life. Walking down the street after a rainstorm and seeing struggling earthworms on the sidewalk who tried to get out of the wet soil because they were going to drown, and now they're out on the hot sidewalk and now they're going to fry. How many of us stopped to save them? Some, but that's just the tip of the iceberg of life, because they have mobility and they can call attraction to themselves. But there are plants, there's minerals, there's all of life in every imaginable form that needs that same care. And our very thinking, how we proceed, how we develop our awareness, how we develop our reflexive, literally automatically willingness to help, how we discipline ourselves to identify an errant thought, maybe somebody in the area is, or maybe the collective mind is worried, horribly worried about something big in the environment. And we pick up all these crazy thoughts that ordinarily would not be our plan of thinking. Well, that's part of the process, to be aware, like the schizophrenic, are you real or are you not? Are you an eternal thought or are you a transitory thought from some other source that I reject? It's the same process, exactly the same process. That constant self-discipline, awareness, that devotional dedication to the uplift of energy and the application of life. Yeah.
You literally took the words right out of my mouth when you mentioned the word devotion. And the understanding that these rooms are provided to give out the teachings of the founders and HPP herself says, do not follow my path, follow the path I show. So we have a little yellow pamphlet, and no matter how sad we feel or how psychically disturbed we may be, it seems that if we pick up that pamphlet and read either the inside page or the outside, is an amazing change of focus.
It is a change of focus. And that's, for those of us that are old enough to remember records, where the record player, where the needle might get stuck in a groove, and then it would just repeat the same sound over and over again. We'd have to go over and lift the needle and move it over and set it in a new groove, get it past that sticking point. In order to hear the music that we wanted to hear. That's what life is all about, is the creative process of perception, of a power to see and to become. That's our soul, learning to see, learning to know, using a spiritual power to see and to know. And it's in the accumulation of all these perceptions and all these experiences that we very gradually reach a firm spiritual identity. And as that process unfolds, as we become focused in that firm spiritual oneness, that identification with spirit and the divine, that's when more and more of the power can express itself through the instruments that we're using. Yeah.
So then what we glean from the talk is that priority in terms of development, if we're going to develop anything, it's not to make the attempt to develop psychic powers, but rather to consciously work to develop our own character. Almost like character won't develop if we don't make the effort to develop it. Do we see anything, any roadblocks in the way that we typically live our lives that really ought to be cleaned out of the way, and so that we would live a life of being more conscious in the development of our character?
That's a great segue into what I wanted to close with. In 1937 and 1938, there was a student who wrote an article for magazine Theosophy called Psychism in the 20th Century. In 37-38, I think it's volume 26 is the first part of the article. Volume 27 is the conclusion, the second part of the article. And the article talks about modern research in the 20th century about the use of psychism, and writing at a time of war, and writing at a time of financial difficulty in this nation in 37-38, the impending World War, and all the crises around the globe, there were physicians that were talking about the stumbling blocks, the misuse of mind powers, and they talked about escapism and fantasy. that there were Americans who were constructing dream worlds for their wish fulfillment, that real life was getting too tough. There were people still suffering from the depression, the financial depression. There were folks who were aware of international developments in Europe and were very, very frightened of that. There were other folks that were worried about the rise of the industrial complex that they could see and the pollution of the environment, and that they began to lose themselves in books, magazines, films of a romantic nature or of some nature that was less than spiritual. And the point is that that passivity even is one of the greatest obstacles of all, that how we use mind in this moment, how we set up magnetic, energizing thought patterns, we're creating matrices, and we are creating magnetic matrices, so that if we choose to avoid a problem, we don't want to raise the self by the self, or we're aware of a collective problem in the country, and we don't try to think about it and move ahead on how can I think globally and act locally to alleviate the stress for someone. Anything else is escapism, passivity, and is a left-hand path that will go to a very, very dangerous place. Next Sunday, this same theme is going to be taken up, and psychic powers will be discussed from two levels, higher and lower, and that will also bring up more about the nature of the obstacles that we set up for ourselves and for others. Have a great week.